his life. It starts out, I look like an old man. So, check and see if she has it. I assume I've done this right. You guys can see me. Thank you. Bruce, I'm kind of actually a little mad at you for playing Amazing Grace as your last song. I just wanted to take some time to talk to you guys today. I don't want to be the kind of pastor that preaches to you. I think it's time we just had a conversation and try to encourage and help you guys deal with what's going on. I have a quote here. It says, if we fill our minds with the grim, we can hardly keep our minds on him. And I don't know where that comes from, but it seems to apply. You know, every generation has had to deal with crises in the world they live in. Most of us are old enough to remember the days after 9/11 and the banking crisis of 2008. And they were difficult times to get through. Our politicians today have become divided, really doing nothing but arguing and character assassinations, and it's a tough world to live in. 2 weeks ago, it was a tough world to live in, but things have changed exponentially in the last 2 weeks. Our worlds have been turned upside down. Our lives have been shut down and stopped. The reason I'm here talking to you from my home office is because in the state I'm in, we're, for all intensive purposes, under a stay-at-home order. And your guys, your lives have changed too. Your lives have turned upside down too. Just in the last 2 weeks, the stock market has lost 30% of its total value. At least, I think I heard this morning, 8 states have issued stay-at-home orders. Unless there's an emergency. They closed the Florida Keys. International air travel has been stopped. These are all lines that we would read in a Stephen King novel, and yet we're inundated with those things, and we turn on the news, and that's all we see. We turn on Facebook, and the sky is falling. And it's hard. How do we do that? What do we do? We're creatures that by nature have difficulty when we're not surrounded by those that we care about. Up until 2 weeks ago, we managed. We had breakfast in the morning. We went to work and school. We sat and ate lunch while we wondered what we would have for dinner. We went to the movies to unwind, and we went to the gym to stay fit. We had parties with our friends, because we are social creatures. We cared for our children and our parents. We went to the game on Saturday with our children, and we went to church on Sunday. But now, those are things that seem as if they happened a lifetime ago. And it was only about 2 weeks ago that COVID-19 became a part of our daily lives, and people are scared. Sunday, before Pennsylvania's restaurants were ordered to close, some friends and some family had gone out to dinner, and it was empty. We were the only ones there, and there was a young lady there that was a waitress, and she was truly scared. And I still keep coming back to the conversations we had. She was absolutely convinced that she was going to get the virus and that she was going to die. And that's, I think there's a lot of people around the world and a lot of Americans that feel the same way today. But I want to turn to scripture and I want to see some encouragement. Because panic has set in. If the rush to buy toilet paper isn't proof that panic has set in, I don't know what we need to look at. Primarily because we're battling an invisible enemy. Most of the time we battle enemies we can see, whether it be terrorism or toxins in our water or environmental disasters, earthquakes or tornadoes, but those are real. We can feel those. We can see those. We can wrap our hands around this. We can't. It's invisible and we can't see it. It could be living in our homes at this very moment. We don't know it. And we're scared. We're starting to see the National Guard in our streets, pop-up tents and pop-up hospitals in Walmart parking lots. Of course we're scared. There's no shortage of things to be scared of today, is there? But here's the question. Is it possible under such circumstances to be free from panic? Can broken hearts still be courageous? Can minds assaulted by panic-stricken rumor still be fearless? And the answer is yes, and it can be found in Psalm 112. And I'm going to read that. I can turn to it. Psalm 112. Blessed is the man who fears the Lord, who greatly delights in his commandments. His offspring will be mighty in the land. The generation of the upright will be blessed. Wealth and riches are in his house, and his righteousness endures forever. Light dawns in the darkness for the upright. He is gracious, merciful, and righteous. It is well with the man who deals generously and lends, who conducts his affairs with justice. For the righteous will never be moved. He will be remembered forever. He is not afraid of bad news. His heart is firm, trusting in the Lord. His heart is steady. He will not be afraid until he looks in triumph on his adversaries. He has distributed freely. He has given to the poor. His righteousness endures forever. His horn is exalted in honor. The wicked man sees it and is angry. He gnashes his teeth and melts away. The desire of the wicked will perish. Even in the midst of the most dire circumstances, there is an individual that can indeed be fearless and free from panic. The one who stands as a rock when everything around them is coming apart. Some of us know those kind of people. I'm not one of them. Someone who doesn't tell you that the sky is falling. And someone who doesn't tell you that it'll all be okay either. But someone who just shares the truth with you. Someone that you can go to for support. Someone that has their eyes focused on something bigger and greater that holds them firm. We see that character in this passage. The character of a God-fearing individual. The passage says, "Blessed is the man who fears the Lord, who greatly delights in his commandments." This person who doesn't fear, this person who looks at what's going on in the world around them and doesn't fear, is one whose first thought is Godward, whose whole life is lived under the mastery of the supreme and fundamental fact that they believe in God, a God that is supreme, a God that is sovereign, a God who has a plan for all things. It's a man or a woman that cares deeply about family. And right now, family is important. I think in this time, we're being forced to refocus on some of the things that are really important in our lives. Our wives, our husbands, our children, our grandchildren. I had a moment the other day. My son and daughter-in-law, my granddaughter were over. And I was just standing in the front door looking out. And my granddaughter was standing next to me, and I just took a moment and thought, you know, away from the busyness of what life was a few weeks ago, it's pretty awesome to be able to take that moment and just spend it with someone I care about. And another character of someone who doesn't wig out in these times is a person of fixed character, a fixed center, someone who doesn't waver, someone who knows the rock and the foundation upon which they stand, someone with character and integrity. The passage says, light dawns in the darkness for the upright. He is gracious, merciful, and righteous. It is well with the man who deals generously and lends, who conducts his affairs with justice. He has distributed freely. He has given to the poor. His righteousness endures forever. His horn is exalted in honor. One whose confidence is in the Lord and proves to be a rock in times of confusion and chaos. One who, rather than hoards for themselves, freely gives of that which they have, trusting faithfully and fully in the Lord to provide for their needs, not hoarding and cleaning out the stores for every last roll of toilet paper, but sharing, giving of what you have, coming together and helping your neighbor, talking to your neighbor. Let's watch this person in these times. What will they do? They get news of battle and death. Their heart is stricken, but they don't tremble. They read the newspaper, and then they put it down and they go about their duty, and they do what's needed to be done. You know, I shared something with a young man a little while back. And if you've ever seen the movie Lone Survivor, it's a really incredible movie, though. It's quite gruesome. But these soldiers were being shot at, falling down a mountain, broken bones, crushed, bleeding. And they didn't stop. It was painful. It was difficult. But they stood up and they did what needed to be done. Because, folks, now is not the time to sit down and go, oh, woe is me. Now is the time to stand up and be the disciples of Christ and the Americans that we're supposed to be, and look out for each other and care for each other. Put our faith and our strength and our confidence in a supreme God that does have it under control. Psalm 104, 5 through 10. God set the earth on its foundations so that it should never be moved. You covered it with the deep as with a garment. The waters stood above the mountains. At your rebuke, they fled. At the sound of your thunder, they took to flight. The mountains rose, the valleys sank down to the place that you appointed for them. You set a boundary that they may not pass, so that they might not again cover the earth. You made springs gush forth in the valleys. They flow between the hills. In Psalm 104, 13 to 16, from your lofty abode, you water the mountains. The earth is satisfied with the fruit of your work. You cause the grass to grow for the livestock and the plants for man to cultivate, that he may bring forth food from the earth and wine to gladden the heart of man, oil to make his face shine, and bread to strengthen man's heart. The trees of the Lord are watered abundantly, the cedars of Lebanon that he planted. Mark 4:39, and he got up and rebuked the wind and said to the sea, hush, be still. And the wind died down and it became perfectly calm. See, the person who faces this world today isn't afraid of it. Now, it doesn't mean we're not cautious. It doesn't mean we're not concerned. It doesn't mean that we're not concerned for ourselves, for loved ones. Of course we are. But there's two responses to fear. And there's two responses to the days that we're in right now. There's two responses to this virus. One is we let it shut us down. And we don't help anyone, including ourselves. The other response is that, yes, it's hard. But we stand up. We do what we need to do to help that neighbor that hurts. If nothing else, we'd be the emotional rock that so many people need. We need a fixed heart in these times. One with a devotion and a love for God and the things of God that surpass everything else. An individual who is singularly focused and borderline obsessed. We need to reevaluate our priorities. Up until 2 weeks ago, we spent our lives chasing everything that we thought would make us happy. We lived our lives moment by moment. I ran out of ketchup, I'll run to the store. We're moving back to a day when our parents would go to the grocery store and they would buy 2 weeks worth of groceries at a time. Almost all our churches have now gone virtual. Everything is changing. And I think everything will continue to change. And that's not a bad thing. I think we need to, we call ourselves Christians and we call ourselves disciples of Christ. I think we need to maybe change a little bit ourselves. We have a really good opportunity to slow down. To stop chasing. To stop trying to find all those things that this world has to offer to make us feel better when we hurt. Every one of us now is in a situation where we're hurting and we want something to make it feel better. We can't even order on Amazon because they're not delivering anything but essential needs. All of the nonsense that we used to fill our lives with. And we'll again one day fill our lives with. Step back from it. Spend time in the Word. Rekindle your relationship with the God of creation. Rekindle your relationship with friends and family. Call the father you haven't talked to in 6 months. We will get through this because the God that we worship, the God that we love, is in control. Some of us may get sick. Some of us may not survive. Worst case is you get to be with Christ before I do. I have a friend who has just found out that they have liver cancer. And you know, it's interesting. I don't see an expiration date stamped on their forehead. The God of creation is working in this, with this, with you in this. I have part of my notes here I do want to read. I can find it. Give me a second. James and Peter. Our only hope is that God promises never to leave us or forsake us. The promise does not mean that we will not fall to the sword, however. It means that if we do fall to the sword, it will not be because God has missed something or blinked or that God has made a mistake, but that God has chosen to maximize his glory in our falling to the sword. In Acts chapter 12, we read that James fell to the sword, but Peter was miraculously released from prison by an angel. Deep down inside, we ask, where was God when James was being killed? We need to fully understand that God was not absent when James was being killed. He was every bit as much there as he was when Peter was being freed. Was it Peter's faith that freed him? See, Peter had just been arrested by Herod and knew that he was to be executed the next morning. But what do we find Peter doing? Was he pacing the floor back and forth, wringing his hands in angst, and I'm going to be executed tomorrow? No, that's not what we see him doing. Was he in constant prayer on his knees, praying for God to save him? No, we don't see him doing that either. See, the image that we would have of Peter in the cell is one of him anxiously pacing back and forth, pleading out, crying out to God to free him, to release him, to save him by any means necessary, tapping his toes on the floor in nervous expectation of his death. But what we see is we find Peter asleep. So soundly asleep that when he's awoken by the angel, he thinks he's having a dream. Peter wasn't concerned about the events to come because his faith was placed in a more powerful God. A God that chose that moment to free him. And a God at the same moment that he took James to take him. God is sovereign in our lives. Whether you believe in him or not is irrelevant. God is sovereign in what's going on. And we can have faith. We can take heart. We can be courageous. We can find hope. We have a text group with 7 or 8 friends from church. And it goes all day long. And sometimes it's like I just want to turn the phone off. But honestly, sometimes it's a lot of fun. We've reconnected with friends in ways that we hadn't before. And we laugh. And we encourage each other. And we lift each other up. And sometimes we knock each other down. All in good fun. So while everybody's scared, hunkered down, concerned about what's going on, remember God is in control. We do have people that we need to remember to care about. And we have a wonderful opportunity to refocus ourselves on things that really matter. God, Christ, faith, family, people that are married but have effectively been roommates, are forced into the same location. Get to know each other again. Reintroduce yourselves to each other. Enjoy each other again. Let these things that we chase slip away. They'll be back. Maybe we will have grown just a little bit less in need of them when they do. That would be my prayer. I love you guys. I just really wanted to talk. Just wanted to let you know that God's still in control. That we don't have a reason to fear. And that it is a good opportunity to refocus. Be well, folks. And God bless.